Miami Beach prepares for massive crowds this Memorial Day and reflecting on the racial justice movement a year after George Floyd's death. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Memorial Day visitors should be rolling in today and tomorrow. Tens of thousands of people are expected on South Beach. Like spring break, city leaders have prepared some rules to try and keep the crowds limited. We'll learn more about those restrictions and the direction the city is going. Also, it was a year ago when protests over the killing of George Floyd reached South Florida. A few people got hurt during those protests, like LaToya Ratliff. She was shot in the eye with a rubber bullet while protesting in Fort Lauderdale. We'll look at how organizations and police departments have changed following a year of protests. All of that today on Sundial, after the news. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for joining us today. Well, it was this time last year, Black Lives Matter protests erupted globally, prompted by the police killing of George Floyd. There were protests in South Florida. LaToya Ratliff was a part of one of those protests, the one in Fort Lauderdale. She was shot by police with a rubber bullet in the eye. The incident happened as she was choking on tear gas, walking away from a conflict that was provoked by police. These details were found by a Miami Herald investigation. And we're going to talk about the impact of those protests and ask if it's led to any actual change. Now, we are awaiting LaToya to join us shortly, but I want to bring in Carrie Ann Royce. She is the CEO of the YWCA South Florida, which is dedicated to eliminating racism and empowering women. Carrie Ann, great to have you back.
Luis, thank you so much for having me.
I wanted to start by asking you your emotions, your thoughts, as you process what's been going on these last few days, a year after George Floyd's death and all those protests that launched over the summer. What are you thinking about?
You know, it has been a pretty big year for all of us as a community as a whole. And I think looking back 1 year later, it really resonated with us that there has been some progress and that we still have a far way to go. But I think most of us felt last year that something different, something palpable was happening in our atmosphere that hadn't happened before. So to see that 1 year later, we're still having the conversation, that progress has been made in some corporate environments, that our politicians, our elected officials, our different representatives in offices are still talking about this, and that it is still considered a relevant issue, is definitely hopeful to us all. So we continue to be, what would you say, kind of nervously hopeful, but continue to be hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding, you were not physically present at the protest, but your organization showed up for Black Lives Matter in a lot of other ways. You know, for this time last year for you, I mean, that's, again, a whirlwind of pushing for change. What was it like for you when all of this was happening, as you saw the protests expanding throughout South Florida, then throughout the country and around the world? What were you thinking about, and how were you thinking about how to use that?
You know, as a woman of color, and I am an immigrant woman with first generation American children, I came to this country when I was 13. I'm a Black woman. I'm an immigrant. And there were various levels of feelings that were happening from a personal level, from a professional level. I run an organization which boldly puts in its in our logo that we eliminate racism, or we are dedicated to eliminating racism and empowering women. There were times when I was angry. There were times when I was hurt. There was times when I wanted to be out in the community as well, marching alongside my peers. The highest and best use of my time, I felt, was, and because again, this racial justice issue has many, many facets, and we all have to show up in the ways that we can, was one, to be proximate to my children and to help them to unpack what was happening. And two, to make sure that the YWCA showed up for a community that was eager and hurting and searching for answers and searching for ways to engage. So we launched our 21-day Racial Equity and Social Justice Challenge last year in the thick of when I think our community were craving to come together. And the challenge allowed folks across South Florida to find a space where they could talk, where they could learn together, and where they could access high quality information in their palm of their hand on their cell phones.
Yeah, and
it was a way that we could show up.
I remember talking to you last year about this challenge.
Yes.
And, you know, look, I mean, you're as you said, you're looking for the opportunity to improve that racial inclusivity in the workplace, to look at the language mm-hmm. that's used in things like meetings, to the hiring and recruiting process. All right, yes. So a year later, have you seen concrete examples of change? Has anything changed?
I have seen concrete examples. And, you know, we were all fearful that all those statements that flooded our inboxes last year this time were very temporary. We were worried that it was going to be lip service. What we've seen is that the social justice environment has stood up and said, we're going to hold you accountable to follow through. And with that, we saw corporations make real change. We've seen investments, which we know that when you put your money where your mouth is when you get really serious. We've seen much change happen. We've seen Broward County launch a racial equity task force. We've seen Daniela Levine Cava open an office of equity and inclusion to do some real work in the county. We have seen the Broward Sheriff's Office launch a social justice task force. We've seen partnerships with the Miami-Dade Police, with the Miami Heat and other nonprofits to make sure that they're training officers in improving their interaction with the Black and Latino community. YWCA ourselves, we have finally been able to launch our Office of Race and Gender Justice Advancement. But more importantly, this weekend, I was on a flight back from New York, which was the first trip I've ever taken. And the CEO of Delta had a series that they have dedicated time, talent, and treasure to putting it out there and being bold. To see corporate leaders step into this moment to say, we do not have all the answers, but we are not going to stop working at it.
Yeah.
I've seen examples time and again in our environment where folks are taking that stance, and that's what we need more of.
Well, let me, and I want to go even deeper than that. I mean, all these things that you mentioned, yes, and I want to talk about these task force as well, but these equity task force, but let's go a little bit deeper. Is mm-hmm. there, you know, and you don't have to call out any particular company or any group like that, but I'm just wondering if you've seen somewhere where they actually did, like, okay, we made this big change here to our process, and that's changed the whole, you know, the environment of our company or something like, any, whether it's an organization, a city commission, or a business. But is there an example, one example you could point to and say, that's how it should look?
I'll say, so we are in partnership, and I'll say it proudly, with Kaufman Rawson, who always tries to, you know, hold a mirror up to themselves and polish the way that they are thinking. One of the things that I found very enlightening and actually very proud to see them go through this process was when they recognized, for example, the way that they recruit employees. And that's just an on-the-ground example that, you know, we've, for a very long time, we have regarded people recommending others, right? Recommend someone you know in your industry to this job. But what happens when you recommend people in your circle is that you always have people in your circle being perpetuated in opportunity spaces, in high net worth spaces, that you start to close off unintentionally the way that others can access and get into the room. And most of the time, we know what others were talking about. And to see them take a look at that and say, our pipeline has a problem. And we didn't recognize that we had a systemic issue with our pipeline that we want to do better with. And since then, they've looked at what positions really need what credentials. And if you need those credentials, is it self-imposed? Are we saying that we need it? Or does a position really need it? And are we creating issues of inequity? Also saying, how do we create new pipelines to graduates in unconventional settings to have an access point to the kinds of fields that we see underrepresentation happening in?
Right.
When I see corporations take that kind of stance and change the way they behave, those are the things that start to dismantle systemic issues.
All right, let's look at, because you brought this up a little while ago, the racial equity task forces. And we saw Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, West Palm Beach create these task forces. Is that enough? I mean, do you think the task force is going to create that real change? Have you seen anything come from them?
Well, Lewis, I'll say this. It's only enough if the task force is supported by people of influence and if it's given real decision-making power. Just lip service, right?
Are you saying that that's the case?
I believe that the persons and the elected officials who have decided to do so truly believe and want to have these task force have decision-making power. And I also believe that the folks that they have invited to the table will not have it any other way. So the fact that there is cross-sector representation, there will be a level of accountability. I think it's a little too early to tell. What I will say is that the alliances that are happening in Broward with nonprofit CEOs, the fact that dismantling racism is an initiative across sector, and that there is real resources being dedicated to not only presenting the goals, the data, and looking at how we do things differently, I think there will be real positive growth outcomes for Broward and Dade County if these task force continue to be supported in the way that they are now.
And these are, you know, we're looking into these as well and tracking to see what they're actually doing and who those members are that are involved. Again, we're talking with Carrie Ann Royce, CEO of the WCA South Florida, dedicated to eliminating racism and empowering women, talking about the protests over social justice that erupted last year after the police killing of George Floyd, the impact of this movement, and any changes that have come because of it. And by the way, we'd like to hear your thoughts. Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial and let us know what you think. Do you think anything has changed really for the better since then? Or what would you like to see change? Again, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. By the way, we are awaiting LaToya Ratliff to join us. She was shot by police with a rubber bullet during one of those Black Lives Matter protests in Fort Lauderdale last summer. She was scheduled to join us today. That invitation stands for any day, but hopefully she will be able to be with us at some point. I wanted to move over to, one of the really big things, Carrie Ann, was obviously the murder trial of Derek Chauvin. He was found guilty. The other officers still have to see their day in court. As you said, as a Black mother, you see the video because it was shown over and over. It went viral, the video of George Floyd's death. How do you feel about those videos being made public and you sitting there watching that?
Oh, man, that sometimes I think there's a level of gratefulness for where technology has allowed us to open and create visibility into things that we have spoken about for decades. We could say there's good and bad to technology. So there's good and bad to everything. Does it normalize this? Does it normalize our witnessing of things that normally we would never have a bird's eye view into? I think that there's more positive than negative. Having the power of open dialogue and everyone being able to see black and white what occurred in our palms. I'm grateful that not only one person was able to video that day, but several, because it offered different perspectives also on what was happening. It's hard to watch every single time. I think I've only watched it once because I just couldn't take it. It just resonated in my soul. It makes me sick to my stomach. I feel like I'm suffocating when I'm watching it. And it is horrible.
And I think about this, so many Black mothers I've spoken to, they have those difficult conversations with their children about police. You have to talk to them about the police, but then they've seen the video. So what was the conversation like? How does it change, or what else do you tell them when they see that and they ask you questions about what they saw?
It's really hard to find the balance in conversations with our children, especially as a Black mother, because we're always trying to find the place to say, this is not all police. This is not all white people. This is not all people of affluence and influence. This is not the way it is meant to work. and in the same breath, trying to prepare them in every moment for showing up as a Black person in South Florida or in the United States. It's a delicate balance and it's hard to do. And to have those tough conversations with our children feel also like a survival skill that we're showing them, but also saying to them, turn on your camera. If you feel like you're in a threatening situation, turn on that camera because it could protect you. It could bring you home. It could give evidence. And also just telling them when and where and how to best use that. Those are new conversations. Those are the 21st century conversations that we're having about coming home safely. It's all, there's no right or wrong. It's the best way that you can go about finding that balance so that our children can continue to challenge us to be better, because they always do.
Yeah.
They see the world very differently than we do.
And I wonder too, if South Florida is unique in that, because you mentioned, you know, being an immigrant, you know, South Florida having this large Black immigrant diaspora and population,
yes.
You being from Jamaica and your children were first generation Americans. Are those conversations a little bit different here in South Florida because you have that extra added, you know, being that immigrant? Is that added on top of the conversations you already have?
I'm going to tell you something, Louis. It's only different for me, and it is not different for them. I was reminded many years ago when I first started doing DEI trainings that when my child walks down the street with another child of color, they're Black children. That is all, beginning and the end. So it doesn't matter which part of the diaspora we're from, the skin tone, the community that you live in, the school that you go to, all predicate the equity conversation that we're having, the racial justice conversation that we're having. It's less about where you're from and more about where you are.
This actually just happened, you know, in the news this past week, conversations about what we teach in schools about race. And now there's a push by leaders in Tallahassee to dictate what we're teaching in history classes, mm-hmm. and trying to stay away from conversations about race. What do you think about that? Now, they're going to be voting later on in June, possibly about, you know, what may change in the curriculum. But just the idea of what are we teaching in schools, do you think it's enough? And when you hear what this effort is in Tallahassee, what runs through your mind?
That it's wrong. That's what goes through my mind. It's wrong. We have known historically that the version of history that people of color have been taught, that everyone has been taught, frankly, has been a very one-sided version of history. And that in and of itself is systemic. It's not necessarily that one person, quote unquote racist, is sitting somewhere saying, let's not tell the true story. When we did the 21-day challenge, one of the major things we heard from everyone who participated was, this is the best history lesson I never had. This is the best history lesson I never had. And I felt the exact same way. We live in a society that makes decisions and we don't study the outcomes many times of how it disproportionately affects our community. And now that we're starting to do that, I think it is irresponsible of us as a community to allow this continued miseducation of our community around the real issues of race and the real issues of systemic racism to not show up in the classroom where all our children can learn the truth.
Yeah.
It does not need to be politicized. It needs to be factual. And we as responsible adults can be factual without being political. And it is wrong that we're going to say, let's pretend it didn't happen and let's not try to make people uncomfortable.
And
this is uncomfortable and we have to walk through it.
And that's a story we are carefully following as well. Carrie Ann Royce, CEO of the YWCA South Florida, dedicated to eliminating racism and empowering women. Carrie Ann, always a pleasure. Thank you for the time and looking forward to another future conversation. This is a topic that won't go away.
Louis, I look forward to our next conversation. You have a fabulous day.
Definitely. And the YWCA South Florida, by the way, celebrating 100 years with a virtual event next week, June 3rd. They will be hearing from women who are pushing for change in South Florida And you can find more information about that on our social media at WLRN Sundial. By the way, just to note, Carrie Ann mentioned the company Kaufman Rawson is one of those organizations engaged in diversity, equity, accessibility, and inclusion work. And just to have to note, Kaufman and Rawson is a longtime underwriter of WLRN. They have no impact on our editorial decisions. All right, still to come. Memorial Day weekend is just around the corner. Miami Beach getting ready. How so? That's next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Memorial Day weekend traditionally brings thousands of visitors, with Miami Beach at the epicenter of all the action. This weekend is expected to be particularly busy given the large numbers of Americans who've been vaccinated. But in the past, the surge of tourists on Miami Beach have led to incidents with police. Memorial Day weekend a decade ago, a drunk driver was shot and killed on Lincoln Road by Miami Beach police. Four bystanders were injured and more than 100 shots were fired in total. Just this past spring break, videos captured a SWAT car and a subsequent stampede of tourists, some of them stomping on top of parked cars. Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber joins us to discuss this year's safety protocols. Also joining us is Glendon Hall. He's the chair of the Black Affairs Advisory Committee on the Miami Beach Commission. He's also an economic development professional. Mr. Hall, Mayor Gelber, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Glad to be here. And let me congratulate Glenn. His daughter won the Silver Knight Award the other day, and we congratulated his whole family last night. It was really, really remarkable. And as a proud parent myself, I know how that feels.
Well, congratulations on that, Mr. Hall. That is a wonderful note. I want to mention, by the way, for this conversation, that we do want to hear from you if you live in Miami Beach or even Fort Lauderdale or anywhere in any of these towns that expect visitors for the weekend. Give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. You can send us your comments on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Should we tighten the rules a little bit to try to make sure that we keep things safe? Or listen, this is South Florida. It's a party place because the weather's great. What do you think? We'd like to hear your thoughts. Mayor Gelber, Miami Beach had restrictions during spring break and a heavy police presence. Do you think that it worked in maintaining the crowd? Was it, did you have, the right amount of police? Was everything in place? And do you feel that it was a success?
Well, no, I don't think it was a success because I think there was far too much, misbehavior. I don't like to have to make the number of arrests we were making, but too many people were coming. Too many people were coming with intentions to sort of go crazy. And the result was that our residents were really put in a bad spot. And in fact, a lot of our guests, people who were coming to our city, were not in, were felt, I think, at certain points, certainly that they weren't safe in the entertainment district, especially.
Did you learn anything from that you implemented into the new safety protocols for the Memorial Day weekend?
Well, I think one of the, Memorial Day is a little bit different in a sense that what we're trying to do is also, we have an air and sea show where we celebrate our military and our servicemen, and we honor those that made the ultimate sacrifice. And I think that's helpful in the sense that it creates activities that are easier to manage. But our response is to Memorial Day and to a lot of these surges of people is to simply put a huge number of police in the area to create traffic patterns that try to limit movement of people into residential neighborhoods and to try to put goodwill ambassadors out there to try to keep people, from doing the kinds of things that we've seen on, unfortunately, on videos that have been beamed out across the world.
Yeah. Mr. Hall, you were embedded with the Miami Beach Police Force during spring break. I wondered what you thought. What did you see? Did it work or do you have great concern?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Mayor Gelber for the kind words to my daughter. I appreciate that. Yes, I was embedded with PD because I wanted to see kind of firsthand what they were dealing with and the responses and everything else. Because I'm a big supporter of PD. In fact, you know, my homeowner association actually fed these guys for Thanksgiving. But I wanted to make sure, though, that that the response was tied to whatever was happening and there was nothing overly aggressive and excessive. And that's why I was there. And I think the Goodwill ambassadors don't get a lot of credit. They don't get a lot of, you know, notoriety for the great stuff that they do. They were doing a good job dispersing the crowd. They do a lot of good work, you know, reporting service issues and assisting residents and visitors. And they were dispersing the crowd because a lot of the crowd didn't even know that there was a curfew coming up at 8 o'clock.
And you know what, if you may, please remind everybody who these ambassadors are and what they're doing.
Yeah, these Goodwill ambassadors are volunteers from the county and the city and other places too that basically volunteer their time to help and be almost like a buffer to you know, the residents or the visitors actually have to be engaged by police. I mean, they're the ones who go out and report service issues, help try to distribute the crowd, you know, do the messaging, answering questions, etc. And I mean, a lot of people are doing that, with myself included, doing that in the height of the pandemic. So literally, we're risking our lives to make sure that things moved in the right fashion. And unfortunately,
Do you think that that those ambassadors, that was enough? Because I mean, you think about this upcoming weekend. You're going to have a lot of people packing into that one area, onto that beach. You need to have safety. But I know that your concern too is that the police force doesn't, you know, appear, you know, as just brute strength. Okay, yeah.
So here's the issue. At that time, there's not a lot of you know, programming or planning of activities at all. It was like the perfect storm. You know, we're in conflict, of course, with the governor. The governor's saying everything's open. And we're saying, no, it's not. And of course, everybody comes down here in a small area. And it was something was about to happen, because you can't put so many people in one spot with nothing to do and not expect something to happen. Right. And so the whole thing, the notion of just having the Goodwill ambassadors, that's not the solution. It's part of the solution. But of course, there was nothing for these folks to do. And of course, you have some of these bad actors who come down. In any group, they have these bad actors. And basically, their issues, their problems were magnified just by the nature of how much people were in the crowd. And typically, what we're supposed to be doing is spread those activities around. From, you know, we've put together a letter to commission from recommendations from us, from our Black Affairs Advisory Committee, and saying, look, we got to spread these activities not only in South Beach, but in, you know, Mid Beach, up at the Bandshell, possibly at Hallover, at Virginia Key. So what we want from the county is not just police support, but also engagement of other activities for crowd control. Because some people are very dismissive about programming.
Right, you know? Right.
But the bottom line is that programming aids with crowd control. When you distribute people around and have them something to do, when things get ignited by the folks who want to cause problems, it can be corralled in a smaller area and won't affect as many people. So programming isn't the silver bullet, but it's part of the toolkit you have to deal with the problem.
Right. Again, talking about Memorial Day weekend that's coming up, in Miami Beach expected to be very crowded. And again, a lot of people have been vaccinated, so a lot more people feel safer going out. But we want to hear from you. If you live in Miami Beach, you live in Fort Lauderdale, because Fort Lauderdale is a big place too for visitors. You live down in the Keys. They have been really busy. We want to hear your thoughts about this upcoming weekend. And is it about controlling the number of people that show up? Is it about providing other safety precautions? What is it? 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Or find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. Mayor Gelber, the most controversial decision probably came definitely when the commission voted to make last call for alcohol from 5 a.m. to 2 a.m. You want to see this permanent. But what happens in those extra 3 hours? What's the big deal for you?
Well, the problem right now is that decades ago, we created an entertainment-only district. And you know, and because of that, that, you know, it has become a place that projects out to the world that anything goes, or that come here and, you know, and do what you want, because there's nothing else there but entertainment. And we purposely didn't want residential and all these other things. And I think that was a mistake, and it's certainly a mistake today. The reason why I wanted to roll back liquor sales to 2 a.m. was not simply to give our cops some ability to not have to patrol from 2 to 5, and but more importantly, to project out to the world that this isn't an entertainment-only area. I hope that this can become a mixed-use area where it's not just restaurants and bars, but it's also commercial residential and boutique offices and shops. And you can't have those mixed uses if you have 40 or 50 5 a.m. hard partying bars there, which is what we have right now. So my goal, and I know some of my colleagues share that goal, is to change the nature of this area so it doesn't project out to the world that if you want to go crazy, this is the place to come. And the reason it projects that out is because there's nothing else to do in this area but entertainment, namely bars, late-night bars, and as such. So it's really about creating a mixed-use district rather than an entertainment-only district.
Again, the number 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. I want to go to, I believe I have Larry in Northeast Dade. Larry, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program. All right, do I have Larry? Okay, Larry, you can call back. I think I've got Mike in Broward. Mike, welcome to the program. Okay. Mike, you there? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think we're just too overcrowded here in Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. There's just too many people. The governor opened up the state. Nobody's the restaurants. You can't get into them. You can't find any parking on the beaches. There's just too many people in South Florida now. I've lived here all my life. I've never seen it this bad. You can't even go to your own beach on the weekends. Forget it. It's, I don't know what the answer is. But it's not COVID. There's just too many people coming to Florida.
Do you think,
that's my opinion,
Mike? Do you think that you know, again, because it's just a very popular place, especially weather-wise, that this is just where people want to naturally go, or that we have to stop promoting ourselves?
You know what? It almost, I understand that from the tourism part, but the restaurants are overrun. The beaches are impacted to unbelievable scale, where they just can't handle it. I don't want to shut it down, but unfortunately, it's come to that. The residents were like in gridlock down here. Look at the traffic. Look at the economical and the environmental impact it's having on our beaches, for God's sakes.
Mike, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. You know, Mr. Hall, I've heard you say before, it's, you don't even have to invite people to South Florida. They're just going to show up. And I'm hearing what the mayor said before, and I'm wondering, is it now we have to change the way that we talk about ourselves and promote ourselves, so that we don't find ourselves in a situation where we, you know, have too many people show up?
I think the mayor is talking about diversification of Miami Beach. We can't just depend on tourism. You know, that's the old way, and we can't do that. You know, years ago when I used to, I worked at LNR, there was a process by which the city went into public-private partnership to bring a company, LNR, to the beach. The owners actually lived on the beach, CEO, but they did a partnership to bring the rest of the team over also. I'm not sure what happened with that. We have eMERGE, the biggest tech conference in the nation. And I don't think the city historically has done a good job is making sure all those companies who come for that conference actually stay on the beach. So the whole idea of diversifying our footprint is very, very important. It should be a priority. And I think that's what we're talking about. And stop to rely so much on tourism, and let's diversify into fintech and everything else. That'll help.
All right. But no, I mean, I'm hearing what you're saying. And you're a longtime resident. So I mean, as a resident, how do you feel about these weekends and spring break and things like that? Or do you think as the mayor and some other folks in the commission have been trying to push in a different direction and not be the party scene?
I think that we need to not be the party till you drop kind of thing. You can party, but party responsibly. I think what folks are talking about is we are becoming versus a live, work, play, a play, play, play. It's just too much emphasis on the play side. And that has to be diversified. I mean, I don't mind when folks come down and I may, you know, it may be a weekend that I don't participate in certain areas of the city. That's fine because we live in an area where we have tourism. But when it comes to the extreme where it becomes almost like an every weekend thing, then it's a problem.
I don't mean to be the cynic here, but, you know, we're talking about young people and you're saying don't party till you drop. But I mean, how do you get that message across to the young crowds that are coming this weekend?
Well, one thing, too, this is the time I'm talking about even for next year. We have to distribute this party atmosphere around the county. We can't be the only place that bears the brunt of this. Right. As I mentioned, we should be having things at Harlover, large area beach. We have stuff at Virginia Key distributed around, though. I think the problem is when everybody's condensed in one area and then the crowds become uncontrollable. And then the only response that you can have is a police response, and which is not the right thing. And I've always suggested that maybe, you know, there's different things you can do as even part of parking is concerned. You can basically say, look, these parking structures are only going to be allowed for residents and people working on the beach, and you can control that. And then in the adjacent residential areas, you have strict enforcement. So that's how you kind of tie that down to actually limit the amount of people coming. It has to be from the door, not just when people let everybody in and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, we have to control it. You have to, like with any event, you have to control the amount of people who come into the city, because if not, then you can't deal with emergencies and everything else.
And that's part of the process. And I'm going to get to that here momentarily with the mayor. We're talking about the upcoming Memorial Day weekend, the expected crowds that are coming to the area for the three-day weekend. Joining us right now, Glendon Hall, economic development professional, also chair of the Black Affairs Advisory Committee. And we're talking with Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber. Again, taking your calls, 800-743-9576. What's the answer? Is it too crowded? How do we deal with those crowds? Is it changing the city's identity? Fort Lauderdale kind of did that. Again, we want to hear from you. Mayor Gelber, Mr. Hall, stick around. We're going to take a quick break, come back, take some more of your calls right here on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Finishing up the program today, still talking about Miami Beach as it prepares for the Memorial Day weekend. And you're probably seeing some of those crowds starting to show up now, some of those folks, and it is going to be a busy weekend. The beach, the city, I should say, has come up with some rules, some restrictions on trying to control those crowds and make sure that people are safe. Again, the number 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. I'm going to come back to my guests here, but I want to go back to the phones and I want to go to Sandra first. Sandra, welcome to the program. Go ahead, Sandra. Okay. Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Perfect. So I'm a resident of South Beach. I'm 60 years old, so I don't party that much. How I feel right now, being that Memorial Day is coming up in a few days, I don't know what can be done in the future, but I know college kids are college kids, and they are going to do what they're going to do. So I live on South Beach because I know they're coming. What I usually do the day before is I decide that anywhere I go, I'm going to take Uber. As long as my home is safe and my car is safe and the restaurants around me are safe, I just kind of stay in and let them have their moment. And then they leave and I go back to normal. But college kids are college kids. I say, let them play.
All right. Thank you so much, Sandra, for that call. I appreciate it. All right. Let me go back to my guests. Again, I have Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber, and I also have with me Glendon Hall of the Black Affairs Advisory Committee. Mayor Gelber, let me come to you. Okay, so, I mean, I've heard Sandra says, you know what, kids are going to be kids. I just get out of the way and I wait. I let them have their fun. We heard another caller say, too many people down here. He doesn't have an answer, but he's saying too many people down here don't know what to do. Is it about controlling the number of the crowd, or, and we've talked about this before, is that you want a different crowd. You want more of an Art Basel. They're not going to be out till five drinking. They're going to, it's, you know, different clientele, more families. For you, what is it?
Well, first of all, you know, I appreciate the last caller's saying let the kids be the kids. These aren't kids coming a lot. I mean, there are kids coming, but that's not the problem. The problem is there are people coming with guns. There are people coming who want to brawl. There are people coming who there's no amount of, you know, activity you can give them that are going to stop them from doing things that the law forbids. So a lot of that has to do with the fact that so many people are coming, included in that group, are people who have bad intentions. So we have to protect our residents and our guests from those folks. And there's no question that that's the priority number one. I do think there are too many people. I do think that we have to project out what kind of crowd we want. Maybe we do want a more sophisticated crowd. We are a cultural and arts destination virtually everywhere in our city. We have more museums and events that are consistent with that. So I think that's what we want to project. The reason why I think our entertainment district is unhelpful to us and it just has to go is that it's become a magnet for precisely the behavior that you just can't tolerate in an area that has residents or just people who want to be safe.
And so there's a lot of
clarity in this. We can't have that kind of behavior.
Have you and the city commission considered changing zoning to change up the entertainment district?
Well, that's what the 2 a.m. is. I do have ordinances out there that would incentivize residential businesses and boutique offices. Just at the last meeting, we got rid of the parking impact fee for somebody who goes to Collins Avenue and wants to put residences rather than bars. So we are absolutely changing our code. And by the way, to Glenn's point earlier, we just spent $600 million upgrading the convention center so that we can attract the kinds of conventions that bring in exactly the kind of tourists we want. We don't want to be a destination where you go to let off steam and to act in ways that you would not act at your home. We're not a place whose mantra is what you do in Miami Beach, stays in Miami Beach. We're not that city. We don't want to be that city, and if we have to police our way out of it, we will, but I'd rather do it through zoning. I'd rather do it through programming. I'd rather do it by projecting out to the world who we are. And by the way, for the most part, we are that, but unfortunately, in the last, during certainly Memorial Day, but also spring break, we are hugely attractive to immense crowds that include people that have intentions that aren't consistent with civil behavior.
Yeah. Mr. Hall, the term Urban Beach Week has been used to describe Memorial Day weekend on Miami Beach for years now. It was initially used to describe a hip-hop festival happening on the beach that no longer takes place, but the term continues to be used by public officials to the media. What concerns do you have about that language?
I think it's wrong. I mean, I think it's a dog whistle term, right? We should call it Memorial Day weekend. That's what it is. And I've corrected people on that. I don't think it should be used. It's Memorial Day weekend.
And the mayor talked about, you know, not policing our way through this problem. You know, I wanted your response on that. Do you think that's what we've been doing?
Well, I mean, when you have police on every corner and we have to have the goodwill ambassadors with them, we don't want to have that as a response. I mean, we're going to pay money anyway. We're going to pay money on programming side, or we're going to pay money on incentive side, or pay money for police. And then on the police side, when we're having that kind of response, then we also are messing up the brand, because that's what gets this. Sadly, you know, when I was embedded with the police, when the police were interacting and the goodwill ambassador were interacting well with the crowds and they were getting hugged, etc., Telemundo and others weren't recording that. It's only when the SWAT truck showed up unannounced from Coral Gables, that's when everybody ran over there to make it seem like the SWAT truck was there for the whole day, basically dealing with something that was occurring on the site when actually nothing was occurring that precipitated the need for a SWAT truck, right? So it sends that. All, I have friends from mine from Brazil call me, Glenn, what's going on in Miami Beach? I'm like, nothing like that. I mean, we have issues, of course, of vandalism, et cetera. But, you know, it wasn't to the point where you had to have a SWAT truck when guys coming out with the AR-15s and everything else showing deadly force, which was a mistake. And so that's why you're not going to see a SWAT truck, you know, engage unless you have to go and pick out somebody because of an issue. It was a mistake, and it sent the wrong message. So all the work that the Google ambassadors and police did all day to quell the issues that were going on was dashed in that last 45 minutes when that thing was there. And basically 15 minutes afterwards, that's when the stampede happened. So it was a mistake.
All right. Let me go back to the phones. I want to get Edgar in. He's from Miami Beach. Edgar, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to see if the mayor of Miami Beach is considering reopening Ocean Drive so we can control the crowds all over the Ocean Drive, basically. We've had the Ocean Drive open forever, and cars used to come through all the time, and the crowds wasn't a problem. How about we reopen Ocean Drive to vehicular traffic?
All right. Edgar, thank you so much for the call. Mayor Gelber, what about the idea?
Well, about 2 years ago, the commission voted, and we have money set aside for it, to create some kind of pedestrianization of Ocean Drive to make it more of a promenade. It might have a lane of traffic. It might not. It might be convertible at different times in the day or on weekends. And that is something that is a longer-term discussion. And I've asked for a commission meeting later in June where we'll decide, based on, I think, probably what our manager recommends and her staff, in terms of whether or not we're going to open it up or not. In part, it's, you know, I like it as a promenade. I think that's what its future is going to be. But it might have a lane, a single lane of northbound traffic without parking. That's, perhaps parts of the day or some days and not other days. So I think that is something we're definitely trying to figure out. In fact, we have a study just came back to us showing renditions of that just a few days ago. So I think we're poised to make that decision both in the medium and short term and in the longer term. So I think that the caller, Edgar, can look forward to an answer to his question this next month with exactly what we're going to do.
All right. And the other thing, too, briefly, Mayor, is, you know, how are you going to control the numbers? Was it like spring break? You're going to basically be counting the cars?
Well, we're going to have license plate readers. We're going to have a traffic a sort of cycle that really almost forces people off. Look, we're not a venue. It's not like we can control people coming in. During spring break, I actually asked if we almost stopped. We shut down our causeways other than to residents, simply because so many people were on the island, and that has happened before, and I do worry it'll happen again, and if it does, we'll shut down our causeways again. We will have license plate readers out. If you're coming at night, it's going to be a long drive to get into our city. We're not encouraging people at night. I would have preferred a curfew at 10 p.m. or midnight, but we're not allowed to do that, according to our lawyers, prior to the weekend happening. We've got to wait till it needs to be shown as necessary. But that said, I think one of your callers was spot on. We have too many cars, too many loud cars, too many people coming, and it is problematic, especially during this pandemic when everybody's looking to go somewhere, and we are a beautiful destination with lots of great things to do. So enjoy the Air and Sea show. Go back to your hotel room. Don't bring your cars onto the beach to rev them up and to create disorder. We want our city to be embracing of everybody, but we want people to behave and follow the rules.
All right, Mr. Hall, I'm going to give you the last word, but 30 seconds. I wanted to know, what transformation do you want to see happen with the beach, with the city?
Well, I think I'll refer to a Forbes article that just came out this week. It talked about how the Class A office product and development pipeline is the biggest in decades. You know, this is the kind of signal we want to send out, that the city is open for business, diversify the holdings and the financial basis of the city so that it can be, you know, resilient, not only in climate change, et cetera, but also in the business market also.
It is a conversation we have time and time again. What is it, you know, what is our true identity here in South Florida? Again, a very popular place for a lot of visitors, and that's what we're expecting during Memorial Day weekend. I want to thank Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber, also Glendon Hall, head of the Black Affairs Advisory Council of Miami Beach City Commission. Mayor Gelber, Mr. Hall, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Well, that's our program for this Thursday, May 27th. Coming up next week on the show, we won't have a show on Monday. It's Memorial Day, so hopefully you have a restful, calm, enjoyable day off. But later in the week, we're going to look at a new program that major banks will offer credit cards to those who don't have a credit score. Millions of recent immigrants from Latin America and the Caribbean have been unable to access traditional credit for years. This may change things for them. Finally, we'll introduce you to the latest inductee into the Florida Science Hall of Fame. There's a Hall of Fame for this, by the way, for inventors. So we're going to introduce you to somebody who is in there and tell you a little bit more about it. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Stay safe. This program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute.